very occasionally an episode needs to be recorded ahead of time for scheduling reasons. That was the case last week as we recorded a fantastic podcast about free kicks and their conversion rates, among other things. Well, last weekend in the Premier League, between recording and releasing, 8 free kicks were shot at goal in the Premier League. 3 of them scored, of course. 37.5% conversion rate. Ludicrously high, ludicrously small sample size. But it does mean that some of the numbers on this episode might not be exactly right. They will be incredibly close, but needed to pop this disclaimer in here in case anyone decided to crunch the numbers and found that we were missing the magnificent 3 free kick goals that we saw last weekend in the Premier League. Anyway, on with the podcast.
The Athletic.
Hi there, you're listening to the Athletic Football Tactics Podcast. We are a weekly mix, aren't we, of tactics, footballing trends and data analysis as well. I'm Ali Maxwell. I'm joined by Michael Cox and the returning Mark Carey of The Athletic. Hello, gents.
Hi, Ali.
Hello.
First question, straight off the bat, Michael Cox, what is your favourite free kick of all time?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a curveball, so to speak.
a knuckleball is what I was going for.
Nice.
I mean, the first one comes to mind is the obvious one, but it's just the Roberto Carlos one, just because people spoke about it for so long. And in the days before the internet, you couldn't really watch it kind of on demand and work out what had happened. You'd only see one or two clips of it on TV, and then that was that for another few months. And it was just a quite incredible free kick. Although I was doing some research for book stuff a couple of years ago, and I read an interview with him in World Soccer magazine. And I don't know if this is ruining it for people, I almost don't want to say, but he said, yeah, I went for it because it was actually a really windy day. So I just tried to use the wind and curl it in. So that did ruin it a little bit, but I still think of it as the classic free kick.
I always think the camera angle, there's more than one, but the one that we all think of, I don't think that is used that often in other football matches. It's a very low, you know, that there's in TV camera football terms, there's what's called the high behind, which it will be at the opposite end of the pitch to where the shot is being taken, and high up in that stand. So you really can get a real sort of, not quite a bird's eye view, but a low flying bird's eye view of it. It's very rare that you get such a low behind, I guess is what it would be called, angle. And for that particular moment, it was absolutely perfect. But for most other footballing moments, it would make things quite confusing. The other thing that's great about that, as well as the obvious nostalgia around it and everything you've mentioned, is it hasn't really been replicated, as far as I know, or certainly not as famously, and perhaps not at the very top level. We've had some amazing knuckleball-type free kicks, but something that extreme, it just hasn't ever been done.
Yeah, I agree, especially not from kind of the fact that it was such a straight position, I think, makes it quite fun, the curl of it as well. Sometimes you get people going round the wall from a bit of an angle, but that was just, incredible. But maybe you need certain levels of wind for it to... Maybe it should be like an athletics 100-meter record. Like, if there's a certain level of wind, it actually doesn't count for the record books, you know?
I thought for a moment you were talking about the Athletics end of season...
On brand.
End of season sports day. I wonder who would win the 100-meter dash. Certainly wouldn't be me. Mark Carey, you've got very long limbs. I imagine they carry you pretty swiftly down the track. How are you doing?
Not at the moment.
Is your favourite free kick of all time?
Yeah, I was going to say not at the moment because I'm currently hopping on one leg, but soon enough, maybe by the end of the season, I'll be on two. But favourite of all time, there's so many famous ones, aren't there? I mean, I like the audacity of the Ronaldinho one, not the Brazil against England one, which we spoke about recently, didn't we, on this podcast, but the one for Barcelona against Werder Bremen, where he just slipped it under the wall. I think it was a Champions League game, wasn't it? That one sticks in the mind with me from when I was younger. I think purely for the nostalgia, the John Arnarisa 2001-2 versus Manchester United.
It's going to be Risa.
Just absolutely rattled it top bins has got to be mine. However, that's not a direct free kick because it was actually nudged by Didi Hamann. So whether or not I get that on a technicality is, you know, debated. But that one for me would be my favourite.
I'll allow it. David Beckham, England versus Greece, 2001. Stand out for me for obvious reasons. Also, a sort of free kick siblings. Lewis McGugan, 2010, Nottingham Forest against Ipswich Town. Hugo Almeida for Inter Milan, I believe it was, in 2005. They're sort of the same... Well, the same side of the coin, sensational. And then more recently, Dimi Payet's, I think, against Palace in 2016. Mm. It's another one where you just haven't seen many other players strike the ball like that, right? And added to the fact that Damien Delaney, who's one of seven Palace players in the wall, has subsequently admitted that one of his Palace teammates shouted, "See ya," as he struck it. Now, I don't know why you would do that, tempting fate. But you could kind of understand why, because the way he's, well, the angle at which he starts it, it looks like it would be flying closer to the corner flag than the top corner, but there we are. Why did I ask that? Well, because in pod topic terms, this week we've been awarded a free kick 25 yards out, dead centre of the goal, all three of us standing over it. Michael, a couple of steps to the side, looking like he wants to go for whip and dip. Mark Carey, the youngster, wants to go viral. He's placed the ball down, Val facing him. He's taken 12 steps back, three to his left, and he's either... Can't tell if he's breathing deeply to focus or possibly hyperventilating with excitement and nerves. And I'm just off to the side. I haven't really been asked to be there, but I'm pretending that there's a small chance I'll get a little tap to the side, which I can slice out for a throw-in. We're talking free kicks. Mark wrote an excellent piece on the topic last week. Michael wrote one of my favourite pieces on the Athletic site back in 2010 that still sticks in the mind.
2010? And... That was when I was very young.
Yeah, precocious talent, 2020. I lost a whole decade there. An excellent piece. And so we're going to give free kicks the football tactics pod treatment. We'll start, Mark, with some numbers. I want to know how many free kicks are scored. Like so many things in football, we remember them when they are. I'd like to know how many are scored and how often.
So the piece that I did looked at the free kick kind of output across the top five European leagues. So obviously the Premier League, Bundesliga, La Liga, Ligue 1 and Serie A. And it does obviously vary across Europe, as you'd expect. It varies between seasons as well. But if you were to look at the raw number, I'd say it would be between 20 and 30 per season on average across the past few years.
Per league.
Yeah, exactly. Which isn't that many, considering how many direct free kicks are actually taken within a season. So it's kind of either side of 400 direct free kicks taken within a season per league. So... I mean, so the highest in a single season across Europe was Serie A in 2017-18. So there was 36 direct free kicks were scored in that season. But other than that, it's closer to between 20 and 30, I'd say. Which, does that feel like to you, to a lot or not enough?
It feels low. Instinctively feels low. Not just the amount being scored, Michael, but also just the amount being taken. A much smaller number of direct free kicks being shot at goal per game than I would have imagined.
Yeah, per team, per game, it's only about 0.45, which means basically less than once every two games you're going to get to shoot from a free kick. Obviously, that varies a lot between teams, both in terms of how often they're fouled in a dangerous zone and in terms of how much you've got a player who might fancy the chances from 30, 35 yards. But if you're a set-piece specialist, you don't get that many chances to really shoot directly from free kicks.
You wonder how important it is to be considered a very good set-piece taker, certainly in terms of shots at goal. I mean, clearly a lot of situations where delivery into the box is crucial and a lot of teams score a lot of their goals from those situations. So I can understand why that would be important, Mark. But if you're talking about a player and you say, God, he's a real threat from set pieces, a direct goal threat, again, you might be focusing on something that doesn't have a huge amount of value realistically.
Yeah, true. And this is the thing, again, going back to the conversion rate. So the actual conversion rate on average, again, across the past few years is 6%. So 6 in 100 free kicks actually result in a goal. And of course, that's sometimes down to good goalkeeping as well. It's not necessarily that 6% only go on target. But it's interesting to think that, as now, I think if you get a chance, you know, from a free kick around the edge of the area, maybe from a fan's perspective, you think, okay, there's, I don't know, maybe a 1 in 5 chance of this maybe going in here. You feel it's a little bit more, you know, you're off your seat kind of ready. But to think that, yeah, 94 times out of 100, it's not going to result in a goal. You, I don't know, maybe my role is to take the fun out of football a little bit with the data, but it's far lower in terms of the conversion rate than I think anyone would have expected.
You're ruining it. I think I'm right in saying, so we're between 1 in 17 and 1 in 18. I think that's about right for 6% conversion. We spoke a couple of weeks ago about the impact of data analytics and a few other things on where shots are taken compared to 10, 20, 30 years ago and how much closer to the goal the average shot is taken. Has the same happened for direct free kicks, Mark, given their low probability? Are we seeing fewer being shot at goal, fewer being scored?
Yeah, I think this is what's interesting. It's something which I don't actually have the kind of the output on as to necessarily why there's maybe been a slight change. There's a bit of a downward trend in terms of the volume of direct free kicks taken across Europe. So previously, so this is per game now, not necessarily per game per team, but previously there was about 1.2, 1.4 direct free kicks taken within a game. But now it's just under one. So it tallies with what Michael said, but it's just kind of doubling it, I suppose. Now it's under one, which across the course of the season adds up to far fewer direct free kicks taken, you know, within a game for both teams. But I'd be interested to know, yeah, exactly as you say, why that change has happened. Is it because maybe the teams are just electing not to shoot and just choosing to cross it or work it into a better area, which links, as you say, with the shot locations thing that we did recently? Or is it that there's simply just fewer fouls around in and around the area because the opposition know that, okay, well, it's maybe going to lead to a chance here. We'll just sort of stay on our feet and just wait for them to take maybe a pot shot themselves and then, you know, start again. So there seems to be a downward trend. I don't know maybe why that is, but again, knowing that the conversion rate is so low, you think maybe you can give up a foul and, you know, they're not going to actually have a high chance of scoring.
I think that's the bit that slightly confuses my admittedly not incredibly numbers-based brain, is that I can understand that there'd be fewer direct free kicks taken, as people understand that certain direct free kicks, it is just not worth shooting at goal because what is the point? But then I would expect the conversion rate to have risen. I suppose the basic equation in my head would be fewer dumb shots from 35 yards, getting rid of those which are hardly ever scored, would equal a higher conversion of direct free kicks, a focus on quality, not quantity.
Yeah, there's fluctuations between the leagues over different years, but there's basically not been a sudden trend upwards, a noticeable trend upwards in terms of the conversion rate. And as you say, that might kind of tally with the differences of the distance. But I think one thing is that if you think about the sort of the other option of shooting from a free kick, even if it is 30, 35 yards out, which is probably in the region of about a 1% chance of scoring, to think of the alternative of maybe crossing from that free kick or maybe nudging it to the side and then crossing from it. I think we've spoken before about corners, that the chance of scoring from a corner, if you think of it as a set piece to cross into the area of a similar sort of ilk, that's only about 2 to 3% chance of scoring, where you've obviously got a congested penalty area. So that's even kind of lower in terms of probability. So I know I'm probably thinking about the numbers far too much here. Sometimes you just think, just have a whack and just you've got a controlled situation where you can sort of shoot from distance. But I think maybe crossing it into a congested penalty area might actually reduce your chance of scoring even more. So it's just flipping the coin, isn't it?
Michael, some of the alternatives to shooting from these situations, I feel like we see a lot and maybe increasingly so over the last few years is, you know, let's say a central area 28 yards out, rather than having a go at goal from there, trying to either by using a decoy or without obscuring it, move the ball to a wider area in order to get a better angle for a cross. Because, of course, you know, lots of goals are scored from indirect free kicks and crosses into the box and trying to create situations that way. That's one alternative.
Yeah, I think that is true. And I think the most interesting free kicks are the ones where they're actually in a position where you can shoot or you can cross and there's actually a decision to be made. I thought it was interesting in the League Cup final. I don't know whether you remember, but Joel Matip had a goal disallowed about an hour into that, and it came from a free kick that Liverpool had in a position where you'd probably expect them to shoot. Alexander-Arnold and Salah were both standing over it, and Chelsea put five men in the wall plus a draft excluder at the bottom, so they only had four to defend the box. So it was 4-on-4 in the middle, and then Matip was actually made a late run, so he was a fifth man, and he got on the end of a knockdown and nodded it into the net. Now I think it was him who was just in an offside position. actually, it must have been someone else who was just in an offside position. I think Van Dijk maybe. But yeah, it's not specifically what you're saying. But the ones where you have to make a decision, I think often crossing is a better option. Because at the end of the day, the wall's just there to block a shot. If you're not having a shot, the people in the wall are in the stupidest positions you'll ever find in a football game. They're all covering the same space with absolutely no relevance to being able to defend the cross. So, yeah, if you can surprise the opposition, then I think that is key.
Now, it's easier to see this visually. It's a bit of a challenge, Michael, but what are those areas, I suppose grey areas you might call them, where you might be awarded a free kick and, well, the decision would not be obvious and therefore you might have this kind of advantage?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose in the channels, in the slightly wider areas.
Within the width of the box?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, I suppose roughly in the half spaces, I suppose, to use the technical word. But I remember, I know Mark went to the Opta Pro forum a couple of weeks ago and sat through these very in-depth statistical talks about football. I remember being there about 5 years ago and someone did one on those types of free kicks, free kicks in the grey areas, which teams shoot and which teams cross. And I remember from the top five European leagues, the team that crossed the most from those positions was Atletico Madrid, trying to use their kind of aerial power in those situations. And yeah, obviously it depends on the situation, depends on which players you've got taking the free kicks. But I think if you can just take the wall out of the equation, that's often very useful.
Mark, because there is a skill to free kick taking, some footballers are better than others at scoring free kicks from these low probability locations. And because of the rise of data analytics and the way that it's impacted decision-making and tactical decisions, strategic decisions, I wonder at what point a team will go sort of full anarchy and stop shooting at all from free kicks. Let's say understanding the numbers behind it, buying into it, but also thinking we don't even have someone to make the most of the decent positions in the pitch. I wonder if we might go, full free kick anarchy.
Yeah, and I suppose it's completely playing to your strengths. If you've got someone like James Ward-Prowse, who I'm sure we'll come on to, in your side, then you're going to elect to have him step up when there's typically a lower probability chance for the average player to score, maybe from 30, 35 yards out. You'd still kind of back James Ward-Prowse to at least get it on target. But yeah, maybe go full anarchy if you've got more of an aerial presence. I mean, Michael gave the example of Van Dijk and Matip. If you've got a stronger aerial presence to maybe get the ball into the box and cause more disruption from bringing your central defenders up, then it's a set piece which allows you to play to your strengths. So if that's the way to play to your strengths, by doing it a slightly different way and getting a ball into the box, then maybe we'll see it eventually. I don't know whether or when that will actually happen across a full season where there's not a single direct free kick taken, but I'm here for it if it does.
I'm sure Midtjylland could give it a go for a season.
Yeah.
Just, I feel like they're sort of the guinea pig sometimes for this kind of stuff. Michael, you mentioned the draft excluders there. One of my favourite football phrases, just because the real life draft excluder is just quite a strange thing in and itself and feels like a bit of a throwback term anyway. Reminds me of my grandparents' house. In terms of defending free kicks, that's probably the most obvious new fad. Do you think having a draft excluder, that is, for listeners who don't know what I'm talking about, a player lying just behind the wall to stop any free kicks that attempted to go under the wall, is that actually worth doing, or do you think it's just a bit of a fad?
I think it probably is worth it because it means the wall can really commit to jumping as high as possible. And I've seen quite a few free kicks where there has been a draft excluder and the wall's jumped and it's just clipped the top of the wall and deflected out for a corner. So it does give you that advantage. But what I really want to see is someone actually take on the draft excluder because often, I mean, there's almost two approaches. One, they're just lying there. And the other one is they just dive like last minute. And I'm always convinced that if they dive at the last minute, they don't get down quickly enough, you know? But yeah, I've never, because no one actually tries to take him on, I've never actually seen a draft excluder actually blocking a shot. Mm. So we always think of it as like, well, you wouldn't want to be in that role. It's almost like, you know, short leg in cricket or something. It's the last fielding position you want to be in. But actually, you never actually get hit by the ball because no one tries it.
That's interesting, isn't it? There's different ways of positioning yourself as well, right? So you could either lie on your back. That's clearly not going to give you the greatest sort of coverage, I don't think, unless you lift one of your legs above the other just to try and block out a little bit more space. You could I suppose, be on your side facing the ball, which would feel like a risk. You might have the ball smashed straight into your face, or facing the goal, and then you can't really see what's going on, and you probably feel a little bit worse for that. So a few different techniques for the draft excluder. Sounds like it might be here to stay. I've always wondered, in terms of innovations like this, at what point goalkeepers might stop using a wall entirely. I feel like this has been discussed before, but it hasn't really taken hold in the game. You know, not for every type of free kick, obviously, but I wonder particularly whether the analytics could help with this sort of decision making, whether there's a certain distance away from goal where the time that you have to watch the ball would be better suited to having a clear look at it. It doesn't seem to have happened though, Michael.
Yeah, I remember it happening once against Roberto Carlos. I think it was Edwin van der Sar. Roberto Carlos had a ball from about 35 yards, and van der Sar just said no wall, stared him down, and just saved it quite easily. So yeah, there is something in that. I mean, sometimes the attacking team will then set up a wall of their own.
Hmm.
But I think that does kind of prove the point, that actually it makes it more difficult for a goalkeeper.
I think as well, like the fact that I mentioned before, that it's, if you're shooting from 30 plus yards out, if you were to think of it just purely in terms of expected goals, you are probably talking about a 1% chance to score. And that might be ever so slightly higher, as Michael said, if there's obstacles put in by the team who's actually going to take the free kick. But if you're a goalkeeper and you've got time to set yourself, get ready, knowing that a shot is going to come your way, then you'd absolutely back yourself as the goalkeeper. So I don't know whether sometimes having a wall for your own team actually then serves to actually put you at a disadvantage. And the final thing I'll say quickly is that on the draft excluder, I think I'd be perfectly set up. At 6'4", I would be the draft excluder every time.
Yeah, but we need you in the wall, don't we?
Well, yeah, true. But
if we've got a draft excluder, a sort of medium height person who's going to give us decent coverage, then you can really extend yourself once the Achilles is healed, and you could essentially be covering 7 feet worth, really, if you could. I don't know how high you can jump, but I think that's probably where you'd be most valuable. Of course, there might be a situation where the free kick is in one of these grey area positions, and we might want you inside the box in case of an aerial threat. Lots to think about in these situations. You can see why teams work on them quite so much. In terms of not having a wall, I almost feel like I'm accusing goalkeepers as a group of something sort of quite bad here. But I wonder if there's almost a psychological factor in it. It's a little bit like goalkeepers not diving at a penalty because there's every chance it goes down the middle and it gives you a pretty good chance of saving it, because it looks really bad if you don't dive and it gets put in the corner. That's the sort of thing that gets pointed out by fans. Like, the goalkeeper didn't even move. What was he doing? On a slightly separate but related level with the no wall thing, it would look way worse to concede a free kick, wouldn't it, Coxie? If you had been the one that was bold enough to say, "Dad, don't worry about a wall, lads. I'll just watch this one all the way into my gloves." If that then goes in, the outcome is way worse, I think, just in the way it looks.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff in football like this where actually there could be statistically a better way to do something, but when it fails, it looks stupid. And I think the ultimate example of that, which is changing a little bit because more teams do it, but when, you know, zonal marking a corner first came in, if you do concede from that and everyone's looking around going, you know, the player was unmarked, it does look really stupid. But it might only happen twice a season, and the rest of the season it looks better. I think you can make a similar argument about just playing a high defensive line as well. Once or twice a season you will be caught out, your goalkeeper will be exposed, but if overall it has little benefits, I think it's those decisions where you need a bit of bravery from your manager to have an approach that might make him look silly but might be better for the team.
I feel like playing uber short from goal kicks as well has become one of these discussion topics. You know, when you give it away, you give it away in a very dangerous area, and when goals are scored, it's very easy to say, "I've always said, why do teams bother playing it out from the back? Why do teams bother?" And actually, Mark, I think there's been some pretty detailed statistical analysis done on the probability of creating your own shot from a moment where you build up from the back rather than hitting it long into the midfield or towards the defensive back line and hoping for the best. That isn't, I was going to say a topic for another day, but we did actually do a whole podcast topic on short goal kicks and how to take your goal kicks with Tom Warville a couple of years ago. So if that's something that interests you, you'll be able to find it way back on the feed. This is the Athletic Football Tactics podcast. And in part two, we're going to find out who the most potent free kick takers are in European football. That's next. Okay, so Mark, you crunched the numbers on this. I want to know who the best free kick takers in Europe are over the last 5 years, let's say. It doesn't necessarily mean the ones that have scored the most, of course. Conversion rate will come into this. But who has celebrated the most direct free kick goals in that time?
Yeah, well, it's the name of a player who we all know. It's Lionel Messi. 22 goals, so in the last 5 years, so since, yeah, the 2016-17 season, 22 goals. So he's got a conversion rate of about 10%, which is above average, but not, considering he is otherworldly, it's not, you know, on a different level in terms of the conversion rate. But it's worth noting as well, 22 goals, but he's taken significantly more than anyone else in that time. So 222 that he's taken in terms of direct free kicks in that time, and the next highest is about 80. So it shows, simply because, I suppose, you know, predominantly at Barcelona in that time, they were a dominant side, especially possessionally, obviously still are to some extent. And they're going to obviously then be fouled in more lucrative areas, shall we say, because they're dominating that territory so often in attack. So when he's the designated free kick taker, he's obviously going to score more goals. And he hasn't actually scored a direct free kick this season for PSG. And if he doesn't score, you know, by the end of this season, it'll be the first time that he's failed to do so since 2007-08 season, which just goes to show just how strong his record is, just in taking at least so many free kicks and scoring from them. Just the longevity of the man is unbelievable.
He's taken twice as many as anyone else, and he has scored twice as many as anyone else. Who's next after him in terms of goals scored?
So after him, it's James Ward-Prowse. So it goes to show just how strong James Ward-Prowse has been. I know that we spoke about it within the Premier League, but even across Europe, really strong. Again, in the last 5 years, 11 goals, 12 in total for James Ward-Prowse's career, but 11 in the past 5 years. And he's got a 14% conversion rate, which is mightily impressive. So 11 goals for Ward-Prowse. Also worth shouting out Nabil Fekir, who obviously plays for Real Betis, but he scored the majority of those goals at Lyon. Mm-hmm. Alexander Kolarov, now of Inter Milan, but scored the majority of his direct free kick goals at Roma. They're both on 8 goals. And one that I really like is Simone Verdi, who's currently at Salernitana, and he scored 8 goals as well. But he is a famous example of scoring 2 free kicks in a Serie A game for Bologna in 2017 with both feet.
No. Really?
Which is amazing. So apparently first player to do so since 2004-05. And I couldn't work out who that player was back then. But he scored 2 free kicks within a game, one with his left, one with his right, which I just love.
That's completing the game, isn't it, Michael?
Yeah, that is very good. I can't remember too many players who have even tried that. And yeah, I wasn't aware of that. It feels like a thing that should have gone viral, but certainly didn't reach me.
I'm pretty embarrassed because I've always considered people who take, or players that take set pieces with both feet, to be among my favourite things in football. And I wasn't aware of Verdi's incredible feat from a few years ago. So there you go. I was thinking of people like Santi Cazorla, I think was always a standard bearer in the Premier League for that sort of thing. There's a few people in the EFL who've given it a go. Elliot Embleton plays for Sunderland, whips in corners with his left and his right foot, equally good delivery with both, which is pretty amazing, I must admit. In fact, I want to know everyone that does this. So if you're listening to this pod and you know of someone across world football that takes set pieces and takes them well, because, you know, there's no point if they're just doing it for show, please tweet me the names of those people at @AliMaxwell_ on Twitter, and only if they actually are. You know, sometimes when I've spoken about this, someone has put someone forward, I've gone onto Y-Scout, watched all of their set pieces taken, and it's just a lie. It's been a complete waste of my time, so don't do that. I thought the numbers on Coutinho from the piece were interesting, Mark, because, correct me if I'm wrong, the way I understood the numbers that you present in your piece was that Coutinho had an incredible conversion rate at Liverpool for scoring free kicks. And not just because of that, but it would have helped him get a move to Barcelona, which we know didn't go so well. And as soon as he arrived at Barcelona, he was not taking any direct free kicks whatsoever because they had Lionel Messi, which just felt like a bit unfair on Coutinho and just one of those sort of slightly funny quirks of football where the goals that he scored would have boosted his numbers, would have made it more likely that he got a move, and then that part of the game was just taken away from him altogether.
Yeah, there's probably very few players. I mean, no one's really going to get ahead of Lionel Messi in that regard, so it's probably one single player who could actually play ahead of him and take the free kick ahead of him. So it was just probably unfortunate. But he actually has, yeah, a 17% conversion rate from free kicks. But the one thing that I said in the piece as well is that it's very, very small sample size. And with all of this, free kicks are obviously such a small part of the overall shots that happen within a game. So we are still talking small sample sizes. Of course, I have to get that in as my caveat as a data person.
Love it.
But yeah, he scored 5 goals from 30 shots or 30 direct free kicks. So yeah, really good return, as I say, largely from Liverpool in that time. But yeah, if there's one player to stop him from carrying that on when he gets a move, it's going to obviously be Lionel Messi.
I was pleased to see Iago Aspas's name on this list, whose conversion rate is pretty impressive. He's scored a good number over the last few years. I think it was 7 or 8 in the last 5 seasons for Celta Vigo, where he is an absolute legend. And the reason I was pleased to see it is because, unfortunately for Iago Aspas, he went viral during his time in the UK for taking what's considered the worst corner kick of all time. So it's nice to prove that actually from these situations or from shooting situations, he is actually a very good free kick taker in terms of scoring. What about those who are less good? I feel like Dimi Payet, I mentioned him earlier, that free kick against Crystal Palace, that certainly bought him a lot of attempts, didn't it, Mark? His conversion, not so impressive.
Well, yeah, not so impressive compared to some of the best. 6% conversion rate. So kind of overall, I guess he's hitting average, but he's taken 83 direct free kicks in the past 5 years and only scored 5. So yeah, taken a lot. He's taken the second highest volume of free kicks behind Lionel Messi in that time, but yeah, only scored 5 of them. So not quite as impressive. Memphis Depay, obviously now of Barcelona, but he's 7%, so he scored 5 from a possible 74. So not too impressive either there. But yeah, they're the sort of the couple of standout ones. But there's plenty of people who have taken their fair share and not scored any as well, which I think we might come on to later.
Tell me a bit more about James Ward-Prowse and his prowess when it comes to this, really the gold standard in the Premier League.
Prowess is, yeah, very well played, like that. Obviously, every player aims to get their free kicks on target. But James Ward-Prowse, when I looked at the actual on-target shot percentage, because all you can do is try and get it on target and then you've got a good chance of scoring. Obviously, if the keeper does really well and reaches for it when it's going top bins, then there's nothing the player can really do there. But his on-target shot percentage in recent years, in the Premier League at least, is far and away better than any other player. So 53% of his free kicks beat the wall and hit the target. And on average in the Premier League in that time, in the past 5 years, it's about 32%. So he's getting on target better than 1 in 2. Mm. And on average, it's often 1 in 3. So, you know, you add that up across multiple seasons and it's just ludicrous. So I was chatting to Dan Sheldon about this as well, the Southampton writer, and he said that even the shots that don't hit the target are really just a whisker away. They're often just the roof of the net or just sliding away from the post. So yeah, 12 goals in total across his whole Premier League career in terms of direct free kicks, and 11 in the past 5 years, comfortably ahead of everyone else in the Premier League. Although James Maddison has scored 6 goals in that time, in obviously a shorter space of time, and I think it was only a few weeks ago he scored a really good free kick as well. So he might be on James Ward-Prowse's coattails. I don't know.
Interesting.
But honestly, yeah, it's at other level, James Ward-Prowse, and not just, as I say, in the Premier League, but across Europe.
Obviously, set pieces are kind of the first, second and third thing that spring to mind when you think or talk about Ward-Prowse, Michael. The delivery that gets headed in by his teammates is sensational. He's scoring at a higher rate than anyone else in the Premier League. It is still only just over 2 goals per season. So again, we come back to this fact of, as much as we love free kicks, you're not getting tons of goals out of direct free kicks. Can you tell me a bit more about what he's like as a player in open play? I feel like this doesn't get discussed very often. Good enough to be taken off Southampton's hands by a quote-unquote bigger club at some point, do you think?
I'm not sure, really. I think I'm not quite sure he's he's good enough to play for one of the so-called big six. And obviously there's sides higher in the league than where Southampton usually finish. But are any of them going to pay the amount of money that it would take to get him away from Southampton? And would he consider it a worthwhile step up to leave the club he's been at for his whole career? Would he go to Villa? I don't know. I don't really see why he would. So I feel like he might stay at Southampton for a long time. I think he's improved a lot, actually, in the last couple of years. I think before he was almost like a kind of NFL just dead ball specialist, wasn't he? Like, bring him on for the corners and what else does he do in the rest of the game? But he's found his role alongside Romeo in the centre of the pitch. He's quite feisty. He gets stuck in quite a lot for a player who's renowned for his technique. And yeah, before he was sometimes right midfield. I think I saw him playing right wing back a few times. But it's a good partnership, him and Romeo. Romeo sits there and he can cover a bit more ground. So yeah, he's a solid player, but you do wonder where he would be without his set piece taking. Probably still good enough to play for Southampton, but I don't think we'd be talking about him. You know, he's almost one of the most notable players in the league because of his set piece taking, isn't he?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. He loves to go curling into the top left, doesn't he, Mark, to the goalkeeper's right. But he did show a different side to him, which was very pleasing with that incredible strike against Wolves a couple of months ago. Saints are quite an interesting sort of free kick team for me because I think of Ward-Prowse, obviously, but I think of Matt Letizia as well. I'm pretty sure Ricky Lambert used to be able to absolutely leather free kicks in when they worked their way up from League One to the Premier League. Even James Beattie could strike quite a good free kick. A couple of little notes that I couldn't leave out. Naiskens Cabano plays for Fulham. He scored a free kick in three straight games for Fulham in the 2019-2020 season. I don't imagine scoring a free kick in three straight games has happened very often. I want to say ever, but I'm sure it has somewhere. And quite nicely as well, it was crucial times as well. It was the second last day of the season, the last day of the regular season, and then the playoff semi-final. Cabano, I think he'd only scored one free kick previously in his career, just rattled out three straight for Fulham, which was sensational. We got another great free kick taker in the EFL. We spoke about him on our podcast interview with Liam Sweeting a few months ago. Scott Twine of MK Dons, he's sensational. He had scored four this season by the 17th game of the season, so he was scoring one in every four games at that point and has seven since the start of last season. So even if he doesn't score another one this season, he'll have seven in two seasons, and he strikes them with an incredible trajectory, which has just been way too much for League One and League Two goalkeepers. Who takes the most free kicks without scoring, Michael?
I've got data going back to the 2016-17 season in the Premier League, and Harry Kane, I'm afraid, is the runaway leader in this respect. Ooh. 48 free kicks and he hasn't scored any, which is really bad. I probably don't need to add that analysis, but it is very bad.
Was one of his first ever goals in the Premier League a free kick?
Yes, against Aston Villa, which was a deflected one, and that was his only direct free kick scored.
No way. So the only one Kane has scored was deflected.
Yep.
Amazing. That's absolutely amazing.
It's also maybe worth looking at it in terms of clubs, because 48 without scoring is bad, but 79 without scoring is obviously even worse, and that's Watford, who, just stop shooting from free kicks. You clearly don't have anyone who can score.
They haven't scored a free kick in the Premier League since 2016, Watford. We've all heard of fans who, when they win a corner, they go, yeah, well, we never score from these. You know, you might as well just give it straight to the keeper because we never score from these. I don't think I've ever come across a team or a set of fans who have won a free kick in a good position and gone, well, we know what happens here. It's going wide. It's hitting the wall. Give us a bit of a history lesson, Michael, because football didn't start in 2016-17. Football didn't start in 1992 either. But for Premier League purposes and the stats that we have to hand, let's start there. Who's the best free kick taker in Premier League history?
Yeah, I think this is actually a good example of something where the Premier League cut-off almost makes sense, because that really is where we got statistics going back to. I imagine if Mark wanted to find who scored the most free kicks in the first division in the 1980s, there wouldn't be the stats there. But we do have stats going back to 92. I mean, there's one runaway leader for this as well, and that is, unsurprisingly, David Beckham. I believe born in the same hospital as Harry Kane was. There's an interesting fact for you. Opposite ends of the spectrum.
You realise that's not even the best fact about the hospital in which David Beckham was born.
I do. I know what you. Yeah, I know what you're gonna.
Well, why would you not have said it then? But Mark, do you know what the name of the hospital it's in the Walthamstow area, isn't it? The name of the hospital in which David Beckham was born is called Whip's Cross Hospital.
No.
100%.
I love that.
100%. And Coxie's playing a different sport here because he knew that and he wasn't even going to say it on the pod. What are we all here for, Michael?
Well, we're here for direct free kicks, Ali. It's not about crossing free kicks, is it? But Beckham is way out in front. He scored 18 in the Premier League era. No one else has scored more than 12, although that could change because James Ward-Prowse is one of those, alongside Zola and Thierry Henry. And then on 11, you've got Laurent Robert, who I think of as just a pure set-piece taker because he was incredibly lazy and quite unproductive in open play, but a brilliant set-piece taker. Cristiano Ronaldo could improve on 11, of course, because he's still in the Premier League. Sebastian Larsson on 11, I would say broadly a Ward-Prowse technique or Beckham technique. And then on 10, you've got Ian Hart and Morten Gamst-Pedersen, two left-footed options.
The stat that always comes out about Ian Hart, which apparently explains why he was so good at dead ball situations, more precise than anyone else, is that he wore boots that were two sizes too small. So he was an 8.5 and he wore size 6.5 boots, which if that sounds apocryphal to me. I don't necessarily see the logic there because it's a lovely idea, right? But also surely unbelievably painful.
Well, I've heard that about another player. And that other player was Gianfranco Zola, who's also on that list. So
he must have worn children's shoes because his feet must have already been quite small.
I think you're right. I don't know. Maybe there's something in it.
Can we get a line on James Ward-Prowse's boot size, please? Michael, all the names that you rattled out, the most free kick goals in the Premier League, they're all guys that we nod along to. Yeah, I remember seeing Seb Larsson scoring loads of free kicks. But tell me about Rick Holden of Oldham.
Yeah, so I went through and I was looking at which players have scored three or more free kick goals in a single campaign, which is pretty rare. And in the first six seasons of the Premier League, the only player to do it was Rick Holden, who was quite a invented left-footed winger, probably more famous for his period with Manchester City. But his notable Premier League campaign was in a very poor campaign for Oldham where they went down really without a fight. And he scored three left-footed free kicks in one campaign. There was a lovely one against Manchester United, almost from the right touchline, that sailed over Peter Schmeichel's head and in. Scored one against Mark Bosnich as well. So, that was a surprising name. First six seasons, the only player to have scored three or more in one season. Wasn't Letitia or Shearer or an early David Beckham. It was Oldham's Rick Holden.
I hope they called him Texas. Texas Holden. Because he hit some flush. So he was the first player to have scored three or more free kicks in a single season. Has anyone gone better than that? Has anyone scored four in a season, in a Premier League season? Or dare I say it, five?
Yeah, there's a few. Two players have scored five in a single campaign. They are players we've already mentioned. David Beckham in 2001, 2002. And the following season, Laurent Robert. Four in a season. As Beckham, Zola and Ronaldo have all done that twice. And it's, familiar names. Robert, Ian Hart, Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, who we spoke to for the article I did about free kicks that you mentioned earlier, Ali. And maybe the most interesting name is Yaya Toure, because he seemed to develop this skill very, very late. I can't remember him really taking free kicks at all in his Barcelona days or early Manchester City days, probably because of the competition. But then in 2013-14, he scored four goals from only seven attempts, which is remarkable. And then that got
me... So general average conversion for a free kick is 6%. Yeah, and for a period, albeit a very small sample size, Mark, there it is.
Couldn't have said it
four
better.
Four goals from only seven attempts, better than 50%, 57% conversion in 2013-14 for Yaya.
Yeah, and that got me looking at players who hadn't taken many but had a really good success rate. And one topical one, because he scored two already for Newcastle since joining in January, is Kieran Trippier. Since 2016 onwards, The furthest I can go back in terms of shots, he's scored 3 from just 7 attempts. Mm. So presumably he scored 1 for Tottenham, which I don't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, clearly he's proved that for England as well.
I reckon he might score 1 for Burnley.
Also, I was just looking at his on-target percentage, Kieran Trippier, since 2016-17, which I know that he's obviously spent time away at Atletico, but he's got 57% on target percentage, which again just shows how much he tests the keeper, as well as him obviously scoring and doing well with the shots that he's had. He gets it on target a lot, which also helped when England played in the semi-final, wasn't it, where he scored the free kick as well, wasn't it?
It was indeed one of very few people England to have scored a direct free kick in a World Cup semi-final on the second biggest stage of all, you might call it. I know, Mark, that Messi blows everyone out the water again in terms of this, having scored 6 direct free kicks in a league campaign for 2 seasons in a row between 2017 and 2019, just underlining how utterly ridiculous a footballer he has been over the last 15 years or so. Michael, one of the really interesting parts of your piece, which I had never really considered, is that some of the people that you spoke to, great free kick takers of Premier League history, mentioned that while we've heard of goalkeepers studying the history of penalty takers and looking where they like to put their penalties historically, in your piece there was some evidence that certain free kick takers have studied goalkeeper movements to work out if there are any trends in how they respond to a direct free kick being shot at goal.
Yeah, that surprised me. That was Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, who I think is almost in the Yaya Toure category of didn't take many early in his career or earlier in his career because there was competition. Presumably when he was playing alongside Zola, it was Zola taking a lot of them. But yeah, he became very prolific, particularly for Middlesbrough later in his career. And he said that he used to study videos of what goalkeepers would do at free kicks and which way they would instinctively step. And that really surprised me because we're going back about 15 years now, longer than that, in fact. And the videos were much more difficult to get then, you know, in terms of it's quite a niche thing. He's not just looking at goals, he's looking at...
Maybe he went to the games, Michael. Maybe when his team weren't playing, you know, he'd go to Goodison Park and he'd watch the opposition goalkeeper, make a quick note after the first free kick and then head home.
I admire him if he was that dedicated. The interesting thing with Hasselbank as well, he always took a really short run-up, which I think kind of threw the goalkeeper off. They couldn't really read which way he was going to go and they couldn't really time their movements. So maybe that was a factor. But I can't think of any other prolific free kick scorer who took that kind of short run-up. Quite unusual.
So Kieran Trippier scored a free kick for Tottenham against Fulham, second match day of the 18-19 season. The goal that made it 2-1 in a 3-1 win. I think that's coming flooding back for all of us now. He did score 1 for Burnley in the second round of the Carabao Cup in the 2013-14 season, and another the year before also in the Carabao Cup. And he also scored 2 for Barnsley in the 2010-11 season. So Trippier has scored direct free kicks for 4 of the 92 English Football League clubs. That's rather fun. Okay, last two things here. I want to know if there's any way of identifying, Mark, the best zones from which to score direct free kicks. And Michael, from you, I want to know about techniques, how many different techniques there are and whether some are better than others or more effective than others. So, Mark, is there an optimal place to shoot a direct free kick from?
Yeah, I wish I'd have done more analysis on the best zones. I didn't have access to enough data, especially kind of across Europe, to be able to map it on the pitch. But what I can do is tell you the average distance of a free kick, certainly in the Premier League in the past few years. If we had more time, I'd ask you guys to guess. But basically, it's about remarkably consistent over the past 5 years. It's about 28 yards from goal.
28?
28 yards from goal. Wow. And the average distance of a goal from a free kick in the same period is 27 yards from goal. So obviously, given what we know about XG, closer the better as a rule of thumb to the goal, you're more likely to score. But yeah, maybe it's kind of a little bit further out. Maybe it's a little bit more lucrative because you want that distance enough to be able to get it up and over all around the wall and obviously then dip back in on target. So surprised me a little bit. It seems a bit further out than I thought, but 27 yards is the average distance from which a goal is scored in the Premier League.
Nice. And Michael, what about techniques? off the top of my head, I've got whip and dip, and I've got knuckleball style. Are there others that fit into the sort of top category there?
I think there's nuances, but I think they are the main two. Feels to me like the knuckleball is slightly going out of fashion, and probably rightly so, because I'm not convinced, but I think there's a huge amount of almost randomness and luck in the way that those free kicks are scored. And I tend to think that if a player scores one absolute incredible knuckleball free kick, I'm thinking Ronaldo against Portsmouth or Rashford against Chelsea in the League Cup, it's almost like they've got free rein to just constantly keep on trying it when it often doesn't really matter. And that's why I like Ward-Prowse so much, because he's the complete opposite technique in terms of controlling the ball through side spin and dip. And I think he's just got the accuracy. And as Mark mentioned earlier with the figures, it's not just how many he scores, it's the fact he gets so many on target. I'd be interested to see the on-target percentage for Ronaldo or Rashford, because they seem quite inconsistent. Another interesting one is Gareth Bale, who scored a great one for Wales in the international break last week.
I feel like that was almost like a hybrid of whip and dip mixed with knuckleball.
Yeah, so I think he's an interesting one where, I mean, if you go back to Euro 2016, he scored free kicks against both Slovakia and England. And the one against England, Joe Hart got a lot of stick for kind of losing it in the air. But I think when you watch back those two free kicks, it's like he uses almost the same technique, but one swerved kind of, how can I put this? It was almost like reverse swerve, the first mm-hmm. one, whereas the second one was a bit more conventional swerve, but the technique looked the same. I mean, I'm not saying I'd score, but I could stand 30 yards out and swerve the ball one way and the other, there'd be a completely different technique. You know what I mean? One would be cutting across the ball and one would be whipping it like Beckham style. But I think Bale seems to be able to kind of nail it quite a central position, but clearly just vary it enough to get the movement either way. And it's almost like, you know, facing a spin bowler where the batsman just can't pick him, can't work out which way it's going to go. So I think he's a really difficult one to work out. We obviously don't have that much data on him over the last few seasons because he hasn't played very much. but yeah, I think he's a real specialist in that regard. And actually, for someone who I think was compared to Ronaldo in terms of his free kick technique, I think he's actually much better than Ronaldo.
So he's kind of like almost like a spin bowler with a flipper and a regulation leg spinner as well. That's really nice. And it's a nice way to finish as well, because the other thing that made me smile reading your piece from a couple of years ago, Michael, was that Gareth Bale's talking about the knuckleball free kick and was clearly asked a question about the science of it, and you've obviously worked out, you know, that this is the best way of you scoring goals as a professional footballer. And as far as I can tell, he basically said, no, it's just more fun. It's just more fun and it looks way cooler. And I think that's a nice way to finish, because as we like to do, we've taken a really fun part of football. We've stripped it back a little bit. We've looked at the numbers behind it. We've looked at logic, rationale, history, whatever it might be. We've tried to analyse it. But at the end of the day, as we said at the top, we can all think of our favourite free kick goals. And here's to many more. A low probability of scoring from a direct free kick. Very high probability of reading an excellent piece of football writing if you're a subscriber of The Athletic, which you can become today if you're not already by heading to theathletic.com/tactics. You'll pay just £1 a month for the first 6 months of your annual subscription. £1 a month to read everything that Michael, Mark and their talented colleagues are writing. So do join up today and make sure you subscribe to this podcast feed so that you get next week's episode as soon as it drops. We'll be back then. Thanks to Mark and Michael for joining me this week. Let's talk soon on the Athletic Football Tactics Podcast.
The Athletic.